Hello, and welcome to the Democracy In podcast, hosted by me, Mary Layton. It feels like democracy is imploding in the US, but what are the alternatives? Does the US really deserve the title of the world's greatest democracy? In this podcast, we look at the alternatives. We explore the good, the bad, and the nonsensical side of different democratic systems around the world. When you have finished this episode, go check out the website, www.democracyinpodcast.com, and there you'll be able to find, under the episodes page, more information about the topics and themes discussed in this episode. This is the third and last section of my conversation about democracy in Mexico with David Palmer and Brenda Lopez. In the previous section, we had been just talking about what other institutions or actors are involved in democracy beyond elected government officials. So at the moment you are joining us, I had just asked them if there was any role for the military in the democratic process in Mexico.
I don't think so. I don't know. Yeah. You, David, were nodding, but I think it was a little bit in, when was it in, when the EZLN came and, you know, it was like a very strong military presence.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. With when the Zapatistas. That? In the 90s, right? Was it in the 90s?
Mm-hmm. The 1994 exploded, yeah.
Yeah. So it was during those times, and it was just like a way to show some strength from the government. Okay. But the government, I don't think Mexico itself has a strong military power. Externally speaking, yeah.
So it's not like the government needs the support of the military in order to have legitimacy. Yeah.
No.
And the other thing is, you know, when I was talking with Nicola and John about the UK, Nicola brought up the question of, in the UK, people like students are very involved in protests and in politics. And we talked a little bit before about unions. And of course, you have strikes in Mexico, which all of these things are somewhat rare in the US in terms of other forms of democratic participation at a public level. Tell me a little bit about that in the Mexican case.
I think it's tricky because also when I was reading like all these political scientists from the United States, it was really interesting to read, for example, Robert Dahl talking about how politics are made not in the big government, but in little town halls, for example. And I think that in a way in the United States, I don't know, you have a better understanding about this, but you have a better or you have a more close relationship with your representatives. For example, I know that you can pick up the phone and make a call to your congressman or woman, right? But here in Mexico, that type of participation outside voting, it's really not happening.
Okay.
It really doesn't happen at all. But we have a lot of like organizations, unions, social movements. For example, the feminist movement has been rising a lot in the last few years.
Yeah.
Urban movements calling for water and housing.
Yeah.
Teachers movements in Oaxaca or Guerrero mainly. A lot of social movements, but that are not that structured in some way. They have like a really weird relationship with the government because we go out to the public space and protest when we are not agreed on some policy. But after that, we don't get involved, I think. And that's an issue for the Mexican society.
I have a question. It's a guess mostly. I'm thinking that now with also the ways of accessing government through social media, I think there is more impact also in that way. Because yes, I don't live in Mexico City. I know when I grew up in there, it was like there was every day there was a different type of social, like a protest and things happening, you know, like you just never drive in the city because there was always something going on and the streets were blocked. But I think, and when you mentioned the feminist movements right now and the women's movement, I think a lot of that also like got spread also very widely, and they got heard because a lot of social media. And you know, like now you can directly talk to your representative by just using Twitter or just using like the same with the mayor, you know, like there's a very different way now of accessing and making sure you are heard.
Yeah.
But I think, and if you know how to do it, then it's very successful. What I think is the problem is that not everyone knows that this is a very effective way to be listened to, to get people to hear your needs or your disconforms.
Yeah, yeah. So you can contact your, you can talk directly to the politicians and the people in charge, but only if you're computer literate in a sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this kind of feeds into the other thing I wanted to talk about, and this is one of our last topics. So if you guys are exhausted, then
no,
the end is in sight.
It's really fun. It's really fun.
I'm interested in, okay, so the idea is we all vote. We have a democracy, right? In order to collectively decide what should get done in a country, right? We have a democracy because it's a way of structuring society and making decisions. But in reality, I'm really interested in like whether average people feel that they have any relationship or say in the decisions that get made. And David, this comes a little bit to the water project that we were talking about that we worked on, where there we were often talking about, okay, you don't have any water in your street. How could you go about trying to influence the local government to turn your water supply on? But I feel like almost at the larger level as well. If you were a normal citizen and there was an issue you really cared about, say there was a law that you wanted to see introduced, is there a sense that there would be an avenue to do that? Or is it a little bit like in the US where the whole idea of you as an average person trying to influence your politicians to enact a law is kind of, feels a little bit useless?
My experience, and since it's a bit limited since I'm not in the city and in the country, but I have a very close friend who works for the government and is very knowledgeable. So when we have the opportunity to talk about things that are not working, I ask, how do you do these kind of things? Like, who's going to listen to, who's going to listen with you? Because I come with this attitude of the average citizen who doesn't know how to approach this kind of situations. Like, I'm not going to go and organize all my neighborhood to come and do a, like, it requires time and effort, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't know the system, if you don't understand how things work, it's really difficult to get things done.
Yeah.
But based on my conversations with my friend, it's not so difficult to be heard.
Okay.
But it's important to know who you need to talk to, right?
Right.
Who do you need to address in order to get this solved?
And who would that be then?
So, and I think that's the difficult part, since my friend is very familiar with the, you know, like the politics, the needs, government and different departments, different who is in charge of what.
Yeah.
It would be very, I mean, for them, it's really easy to say, oh, you just need to write to this or call to the, go to their website and find this information, or just go to this web place and, you know, like you can complain and they have to listen to you.
Yeah.
And because there's also the Transparency Institute in Mexico, which is a new brand new thing, they are supposed to also make sure that all these institutions, which this institute is detached from the government, right? Yeah. So it's supposed to be a neutral institution to make sure that the people are being heard and they are trying to, like, all the data is handled appropriately, etc. But I think the big problem that I find is that not everyone has the know-how. And it's basically education and experience.
Yeah.
And it's really, for me, like, I'm not exposed to the situation. I don't know who would be in charge of doing this kind of, or solving this kind of problems. Who do I need to talk to? And it's, I don't even know how I would learn that, I have to say honestly. Like, yes, I have a problem with water. Which institution would be in charge of for me to contact that? I don't really know. And maybe that's kind of like the big problem, right? Like, it's not clear who do we need to talk to. Yes, it's if we are a lot of us and we have a big mass of people who come and manifest our discontent, we are in front of like the representation for water resources, then yes. But somebody is kind of like having that information and helping organize that.
I totally agree. I think, I don't know if you remember, Marek, we had a case in the project. We were studying a house called in Xochimilco, and they didn't have water for 6 years or something like that. Like, they will get only a little chorrito, we will say in Mexico, a little amount of water every day.
Dribble,
and they were charged for water like 800 pesos, which is a lot for water. And the mother of the household was trying to reach the water utility, but she didn't know who to call.
Right.
So she was calling the alcaldía or delegación.
Who's the mayor of the neighborhood?
the local
representative.
sum of neighborhoods. The
Yeah.
alcaldía is the local government. And after 6 years, she found a number from the water utility and she could make that call and they fixed her problem.
Six
Wow.
years.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it's about what Brenda was saying. It's about knowledge and about education. And usually, as we know, like middle class people have the knowledge and the resources to do these kind of things. Like I know some guy that works at that place and working class people doesn't have that resources. So it's more difficult for them to have access to that kind of thing. But also in this government, I think has been getting more easy in some ways getting easier. Thank you. Because we have more resources. Of course, if you don't have a computer, you cannot access a website.
Right.
That's a thing to consider. But the mayor, she has been doing these open audiences for people. So you can walk into an audience with a mayor now, or you have many channels to ask for things. But you have to know where to look.
So there are ways of getting problems fixed on a sort of individual household neighborhood level, but you have to have this knowledge. You have to, which of course is class-based and economics-based, et cetera, et cetera. In terms of like big major changes to the law, actually something like what we were talking about before in terms of both gay marriage and abortion, if people have big issues that they care about, that, you know, like large issues, is there a sense that ordinary people feel they could contribute to those conversations, or is it just things that happen to them, decisions that are made that are imposed on them?
I would say the latter, but that's
like
I think the Mexican attitude is very also like pessimistic, and it's kind of like ruined by prior experiences where
interesting,
you know, like just everything has happened, the government is bad, the government doesn't do things for us, we are affected, then we have a president who is doing things for people, and it's more like an, you know, like currently, right, it's trying to help more in the popular way, some people, but still the idea that you can contribute to shaping your own country, it's far away because
interesting.
It's just like, well, at the end, nobody listens to me, but just let them do what they have to do and we'll vote in the next elections and see if somebody else comes with better ideas. It seems like more like their responsibility rather than my responsibility as a citizen.
Like we elect you, it's your responsibility to deal with that stuff. And you're probably not going to do a good job anyway, but whatever, we'll just all participate.
And I think it's, I'm talking mostly like the kind of, I would say, I mean, this is with the conversations that you have with just like older people, like my mom and her friends, and you know, like, it's just the way they were used to like delegate. Okay, you got there and you know, like I'm not knowledgeable. I know how to take care of this, but I hope you can. And that's kind of like you have my blessing.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it comes down to what we were talking about before about the verticality of the system, of the political system in Mexico. Like the Tlatoani makes all the decisions and I just accept them or not. Yeah. But also, I mean, in the form of protest, I think people think we can change things. For example, the woman movement, even in water, like even in the project, we have some examples where people used to organize and close a street within their neighborhood to ask for water or things
protest,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So in that kind of like collective action, I think we think, we can make a difference. But I mean, we know that social movements and collective action usually, they make a difference in the long term.
Yeah.
But it's not like, we protest for abortion in Puebla and they passed the law in Puebla. So it's a more
it passed in Puebla?
Low process. No. That's why I say that, Mary, because Puebla is a really conservative state.
Okay.
That's why No, that's why I was making that example, because it's really hard to do that.
Yeah. So it's interesting because it's not like a direct relationship, not like, oh, I'm going to go and talk to my government representative who represents me in my neighborhood and ask him to consider this or her to consider this, and then she will take it up to the legislative level and so on. It's more, okay, I'm giving you my legitimacy because I voted for you. Go off and do your job. And if we don't like what you're doing, we're going to do a massive demonstration outside of the place where you work and tell you that we don't agree with it. But otherwise, go do it.
Exactly.
Okay, just if that sounds right. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, some sort of final questions. The big one is like, so after all of this, like, do you think that Mexico is a democracy?
That's a big question.
Yeah, does it feel like a healthy democracy? From your position where you are right now?
I don't know. I don't know. I remember one definition of democracy by Czeborski, a Polish guy who was studying Chile and some stuff. And he used to say that democracy is only about secure, regular and free elections. Mm-hmm. That's it. I mean, that's the very least we can hope for.
Mm.
But if we are in a state that we cannot even have that because of the narco territory controlled by the narco, it's really hard to think of Mexico as a democracy.
Mm.
And also in terms of journalism or in free of speech, I think even in these big international indexes, we are not living in a, well, it's like a medium democracy, let's say, right?
It's complicated,
so,
yeah.
I think we have a lot more way to go. And even in these last couple of years with this president, a lot of things have moved backwards. For example, the National Electoral Institute has moved backwards in terms of how the councils are elected, for example. And also, like Brenda was talking about the Instituto de la the Transparency Institute, and the president wanted to get rid of that.
Yeah.
And he cut out the Electoral Institute budget by a lot.
Yeah.
So these kind of things are making you think this guy doesn't want us to have a democracy. So I would say no. We are not a democracy.
Interesting. Yeah.
Just to like say something like
it's
really
a
wrong.
Tough question. I'm sorry I put you on the spot. Brenda.
No, but it's great to answer it, I think.
Yeah.
No, I think like if we look back and let's say with the 70 years of power from PRI, for example, right? Like where it was a false idea of having a say on who you put in power.
Yes.
So it can go to very simple ways of thinking about it, where it doesn't matter who you want in power, it doesn't matter how many votes they get, still like that things will not change. And it's all kind of like a obscure, very difficult way of understanding for people and for the country, right?
Yeah.
And the way that has evolved, I think it was a big step. The moment Dupree was not elected, that was a big thing, historically speaking, right? Like, again, it came into very similar, like, right, a government, a very similar way of government, but it didn't matter because it was a hope, I think, and that gave hope to people.
Interesting.
And I was part of, I'm old enough to say that I was alive when that happened, right?
Yeah,
so it was like, oh my, there's a change and it's possible.
Yeah.
And then again, this power kept taking turns between one and other president. But and also something that is important to mention is that in Mexico, there are no re-elections. So you have a president every 6 years and there's no second term.
Okay.
But what's happening now, and now we have somebody new, somebody kind of like the new kids in the block, he's becoming the president. And they like the flavor of this kind of power. And again, they're trying to change, at least my understanding, 3 years or 2 years ago, as soon as he got into power, trying to change the constitution for re-election and, you know, like extending the terms and trying to stay longer. I think it's like there's all these complexities between the desire of power, desiring of being in control, and also how people look at things. I think at this point, I would think, my guess, like, it's very strange how people, like, his approval rates are high, right? I hear
his approval rates,
Yeah, they're super high. And people are, well, not super, but he has good rates, more than 50%. And then you hear people at the personal level, mm-hmm. and it all depends on who's talking about it. Mm. They are not super happy with this.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that they feel like now, again, it's like David is saying, like, if we simplify things, mm-hmm. like you have the power to elect your, if you have the power to elect who is going to lead you, then there is democracy. If you don't want to participate in the government process and you don't consider acting and enacting your citizen rights, mm-hmm. then it doesn't feel like a democracy. And well, I think that's a one big problem.
There's also that question of if your choices are identical, then how much is it really a choice kind of thing? Thank you, guys. So my final question is, can you give us an example of what you think is either the best or the worst or the weirdest thing about the electoral system in your country?
I like the fact, something that I like about the elections here is that there is a limit on up to when you can continue your campaign.
Oh, yes.
2 weeks before the elections is a quiet time.
Ah.
Like nobody else can talk about it. No, I mean, you can talk about it, but no more publicity, talking about it, no more campaigning, nothing. Uh-huh. It's like you're not supposed to do it. And it feels good as a citizen because it's just like you have time to kind of like reflect and think and just make your decision without the last minute influence.
That's really interesting. Is there a beginning? Is there a limit on when you can start as well?
There is, but I don't remember that. And also the idea of like budget, everyone is giving a same amount of money. That's what I remember. I don't know if that has changed. But it's not that you have 20 million to make your own campaign and then somebody else has five. And, you know, like you can look for that. But I think there's a balance in that. In there.
It makes it more balanced. So there's a limit to the amount of time you can spend campaigning and there's a limit to the amount of money you can spend. That's really cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. David, what would you say? Best, worst or weirdest?
I think the best has been the improvements in the last 30 years, as Brenda was saying. I was born in the 80s, mm-hmm. and I think that people now doesn't understand the scope of the changes that we have been living in the country.
Interesting.
Like the freedoms, but also like the strength of the democratic system, mm-hmm. and why do we have to fight for it?
Yeah.
To say we trust in the Electoral Institute. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't at the moment, but I used to. Because it was used to be formed by citizens. It was really democratic.
Yeah.
The councils were elected really in a democratic way.
Yeah.
And those were changes that impacted democracy in Mexico in a huge way.
Yeah.
So that's one of the best things that we have in the democracy in Mexico. Even the freaking ID, the electoral ID, it's really good to have. Like, we have a lot of safety nets for it.
Yes.
And for... So we don't allow dead people to vote, like we were saying.
No more dead people voting. That's the best thing about democracy in the last 30 years.
I mean, because all of the frauds, we can summarize it that way. But also, like, as Brenda was saying, the worst, I think, moving backwards, I mean, it's a really complex issue because mm-hmm. I believe in re-election because I think it's one of the sharpest tools that a democracy can have. But since we have a history of a party ruling in power and also an authoritarian state with before the revolution, we have a really weird relationship with re-election. For example, we have started doing re-election at the alcaldía level here in Mexico City. So it's a good thing because if you said I live in Benito Juarez and I am good with the policies and the things that the alcalde has been doing for the last couple of years, mm-hmm. I will vote for him again if they have it. But in the presidential level, it's really tricky, as Brenda was saying, because this guy has been changing a lot of things like this. I think this referendum thing that he did in April was a way to try and see the support that he had if he was going to try to make a re-election.
Yeah.
And I think he realized that he couldn't do it.
Couldn't do that.
But it was a way to do it. And in the long run, I believe in the re-election as a tool for democracy, but not in the current state of things in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
So... moving backwards in democracy terms, I think, is the worst thing that we've been living on.
Well, thank you guys so much. This was really interesting. I feel like I've learned a huge amount, and not just in comparison to the US, but just in general, thinking through some of these concepts.
Thank you. It was fun to have this conversation.
Excellent. It was really fun, and also having your take on US democracy and comparing some of the things that we live as citizens.
Yeah.
And thank you for having us.
No, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe, share, or even support us by going to the website www.democracyinpodcast.com. There, you can also find more information about the topics discussed today, as well as updates on which countries I will be visiting next.